welcome into First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. As always, that is Nick Wright. Good morning, guys. Big show ahead. Tom Brady has two new receivers to throw the ball to. Aaron Rodgers might be sidelined against the Vikings. But we start this morning with those Dallas Cowboys. Most notably, Dak Prescott, who threw for just 170 yards Sunday in a loss to the Panthers. Not the way the Cowboys wanted to start the season, especially with those Giants coming up on Sunday. Dak will shoulder the load again to help his team avoid going 0-2. But Jerry Jones is still super high on his quarterback, saying Dak is somewhere between, ready guys, Jared Goff and Cam Newton. Nick, I'll start with you. What do you make of Jerry Jones' assessment?
Somewhere between Jared Goff and Cam Newton, eh? Geographically, that's accurate. Goff plays out west, Cam out east, Dak's right in the middle.
Sure.
I mean, almost complexion-wise, that's, I'd say, somewhat accurate. As far as stylistically, though, yeah. I can't give him that. How is Dak as a rusher? Because when he says Cam, that's what he's talking about. Cam as a runner of the football.
And Goff as a pocket.
And Goff as a passer. So Dak's never had a game with more than 45 yards rushing in his career.
Never?
Never. Cam had 59 in the first quarter.
In his career? Oh, first quarter.
In the first quarter.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday. Yeah, all right, as far as Dak as a passer, he's been under 200 yards in 7 of his last 9 games played. Goff's been over 200 yards in 7 of his last 9 games played and only under 200 3 times in the last 2 years. I understand what Jerry Jones is trying to do here, which is take two guys, one guy that runs and is big, and one guy that he saw play the night before in Jared Goff,
and say,
this is what it reminds me of. It was a funny comparison because, see, this past week, when you were traveling on your way to do the game, I did a hit on a local television station in Dallas. And the anchor there said, leading into the game, asked me, you know, Dak Prescott, is he kind of like a young Cam Newton? And I tried to be respectful because the guy's a local news guy.
Yes.
Doesn't cover sports every day. But I had mentioned to our staff afterwards, I was like, man, this guy is asking me, is he Cam Newton? Like, that they have nothing in common.
He's
like,
been listening to Jerry.
Right. Or Jerry's been listening to him. I mean, Cam is Cam's the greatest rushing quarterback we've ever seen. Now, he has limitations elsewhere, but as far as the ability to effectively run the football as a quarterback, Cam's the best we've seen.
And the other two quarterbacks we compared him to, one, a good friend of mine, Randall Cunningham, who I played in Philly with, mm-hmm. and then later, when he became a pocket passer there in Minnesota, and a friend of the show, Michael Vick.
Yep.
All right? Those three guys, in the history of this league, or let's just look at the last 25 years, yep. those guys are the most effective runners with the football.
And this is the reason I really push back on the Cam comparison is we would never it's not racist, but it's racial. There's nothing about Dak's game reminds you of Cam, except he's a big black quarterback. But he's not nearly as big as Cam, and he's not athletic as Cam. And so we can keep talking about different things Dak reminds us of. The reality is Dak, over the last year plus, has reminded us of a mid-round backup quarterback who was thrust into a starting job now doesn't look
ready.
Give
me ready. A name who he think he – who does Dak remind you of right now?
Right now, a guy who's a borderline NFL starter. I'll try to pull one from memory, but is there a guy that Dak's style reminds you of?
I can't say right now. Dak is still in the developmental stage. The only reason why we're doing this comparison is because their owner, general manager Jerry Jones,
right.
is saying that. But the truth of the matter is, there's no one. And I know Cam is one of Nick's favorite players. I like Cam as a player. But I won't let anyone try to compare himself to Cam Newton as a runner or as a physical specimen.
Right.
Like, absolute. At the combine, Andrew Luck's numbers, vertical leap, running 40-yard dash, broad jump, all those things were almost exactly like Cam. Those are the only things exactly the same. When they get on the field, Andrew Luck is not. And we have seen the last couple years how many times he gets hit and how he responds to getting hit the way Cam Newton is. So I'm not going to let people compare themselves to what I think is the most gifted physical quarterback in Cam Newton. The truth of the matter is, Cam Newton would love to be Jared Goff and Cam Newton. I mean, you talk about that. Dak could be, oh, he's Goff. Oh, yeah, the best of the young and one of these other stallion quarterbacks we have. No, Cam would love to be able to pick and stick a guy like Goff does. He would love to be able to do the play action pass. And just like Jared Goff would love to have the body of Cam Newton. Don't put this type of pressure on your quarterback. And now, this is the question I ask myself. Has Jerry convinced himself of this? Because he's getting ready to have to write a big check. Because if your quarterback is that next season, because Dak was not a first rounder, they're going to have to sign him to a ginormous contract next year. And if they decide to do that, I believe the Dallas Cowboys and their arc and trajectory into the next few years, it's going to be, to me, Dak right now is fighting to see if he's going to be the franchise quarterback in Dallas.
Exactly.
If he does not have a good year, I believe Jerry Jones is going to regret what he said yesterday.
Well, look, the bottom line is Jerry Jones fully supports Dak Prescott, wants to support Dak Prescott, wants Dak Prescott to be the guy that he's describing, the guy that he has supported. But then he also went on to say yesterday, talking about his receivers, they did get separation. We just didn't get the ball to them. So you have to wonder how much of it is on his young quarterback and how much of it is on the receivers that he either has or really doesn't have on that offense.
Jenna, that is a great observation. I jotted those same quotes down because we did that. I knew that wasn't the quote we were leading with. That, to me, was the more relevant quote, because you can't have a situation where, see, you talked about before the game, Jerry went through each and every lineman, didn't he?
Yes.
And evaluated their play, said they played well, said the guard did this, the center did that, spoke well of them. Says Dak can be this. Says the wide receivers, quote, did not play bad, and as you said, they got separation. We didn't get the ball to them. Well, then how the hell you score 8 points? Unless your quarterback was an enormous limiting factor. I know Zeke only had 15 carries, but he gave you 70 yards and a touchdown. Like, your quarterback was the limiting factor, along with what I would say, I think he misevaluated the line play. I think the offensive line got eaten alive by Carolina's front. But this is... we said it going into the year. Because he doesn't have that fifth-year option, this is an enormous year for Dak Prescott and an enormous year for the Cowboys as far as what the future of that position will be.
I know what would have happened, but just imagine if one of the wide receivers would have said after the game, hey, you guys didn't get many catches and everything. Allen Hurns, they go to Hurns and be like, what happened? Oh, I was open. So you got to be careful. Jerry doesn't know what he's doing when he starts saying that guys were open. So now the reporters, when they go to the wide receivers, were you guys open? They have a problem answering, because if they answer, yes, I was open, then, well, you didn't get delivered. Either the offensive
puts
line
them in a tough
was
position.
Bad or the quarterback was bad.
All right, so now they face the Giants, and they obviously want – they cannot afford at this point to go down 0-2. What do you want to see from Dak facing the New York Giants this weekend?
I want to see how many completions he can have just on straight drop back. Well, why is that important? Because the defense is going to give them that. They put 7 guys to the line of scrimmage in the whole ball game against the Dallas Cowboys. A lot of times they had free access on the outside. They had young corners they were going against. They didn't attack them. I want to see them be able to attack people on the outside. And I want to see how many plays. Nick, how many pass plays did they have over 20 yards?
Zero.
Oh.
They had zero plays over 20 yards.
Oh, you cannot win in this league with big plays. Not unless you got the purple people eaters, the fearsome foursome, the 85 Bears. You're not going to be Ray Lewis in the Ravens. You're not going to be able to win NFL games when you don't have that type of productivity. And that type of productivity will open up the running game. So Jerry can make as many excuses. Hey, say he's the cross between Tom Brady, Cam Newton, and Y.A. Tittle. I don't care. You can try to. This is what people do. When they like you, they look beyond your faults or your deficiencies. When they don't like you, they bring up all the little stuff. And that's what's going on. Dallas is stuck with Dak right now because they've changed their coaching staff, their wide receivers, they've changed those. And Jerry has publicly said, this is a Dak-friendly offense.
Right.
Well, it should be a Zeke-friendly offense, because he's the best offensive player they have.
And as far as this week, it would be good for the Cowboys, and it'd be nice to see Dak Prescott get back on track this week. I believe the Cowboys can beat the Giants without Dak getting back on track, because unlike the Carolina game, I think this is a game Zeke can dominate. I think Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys offensive line can dominate the Giants front. I also think the Giants are very limited offensively. We saw that this past week, and you don't have to score 28 points points to beat them. So I think this is a game where the focus is going to be more on Zeke getting back to the form we saw him at pre-suspension last year rather than a game that Dak dominates. But you can't have, I said at the beginning of the show, 7 of his last games under 200 yards passing. Mm-hmm. That's all right if you're the LSU quarterback. That is not all right if you're the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. And that's a trend he's got to stop.
Another quarterback who had a shaky start on Sunday, Ben Roethlisberger, coming up. How worried should the Steelers be after they tied the Browns? Hear it from Big Ben next on First Things First. Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking best celebrity fans. Vote on Twitter or Instagram with the hashtag FanIndex plus the hashtag for your school. Learn more at collegefootballfanindex.com. Thus far, USC is leading this week. Guys, which school would you vote for?
How's Ohio State not in the top five, C?
Well, they got a weird way that they rank them and everything. We only been playing football since 1890.
And LeBron's a celebrity fan. You're a celebrity fan. See Tristan Thompson back there.
I was going for Ohio State.
Jenna's a pseudo-celebrity fan.
Well, I can understand USC. USC with all the celebrities being in Hollywood.
McConaughey.
LA. LA. That's Texas. Longhorns. But LA, all these celebrities live there and everything. Mm-hmm. And they're not really smart. They can't get into UCLA. So they got to go over to USC. All right? They can't get in. They can't get in over at UCLA. So USC is way up there. They've always had a lot of stuff. And Snoop didn't graduate from there, but just by... He had a relationship with a professor, and they gave him an honorary degree.
And Dre's got a building named after him there. So USC, I get it. They do have the Hollywood aspect. Okay, that's fair.
Yes.
Yeah. Once again, Jenna's upset Binghamton's not on the list.
Just a little bit upset. Not mortified. Just a little bit upset. Don't laugh while you take your coffee sip. Hey, we're going to get to Big Ben in just a second. But first, some great high school highlights. Oh. Georgia High School football, Augusta Prep's Bailey Adams coming down with an amazing catch.
Oh, go ahead, C.
It reminds me of the Saints interception, Lattimore, last year that he got against Atlanta, where the ball was landed on his back.
I was thinking the famous Brett Favre play on Monday Night Football, where Antonio Freeman, he falls down on the sideline, the defender falls down. Yeah,
you have no clue what you're doing, do you?
What do you mean?
That was against my Vikings, doofus.
Yeah, well, sorry. You didn't play DB. Doofus?
Yeah, I handled the held that L,
though. Yeah, you did.
When mutual doofuses are going on, I like to let this one play out.
Okay.
Lower Cape May Regional High School, this one here in New Jersey, Patrick Moore.
Matter of fact, my name is Rufus.
Kick
your name
blocked.
Is Doofus.
Doesn't matter, breaks a ton of tackles and gets in the end zone. Now watch it again.
That's brutal for the defense. You block the kick and you end up giving up the touchdown. Oh.
Man, shout out to kickers, man. We don't think are football players. This kicker's a football player.
Yeah, man, he might play a little defense, too. High school football, go both ways.
All right, finally, Ocean Springs High School, Mississippi. Isaac Gowdy catches the interception off of a teammate's foot.
Oh.
You see that?
I didn't know Tim Tebow left the Mets farm system and was playing high school again, number 15. That's Tim Tebow. He throw that thing just like him, too.
Look at that, right anywhere.
He sure does. That's a hell of a play right there.
All right, moving on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. An uncharacteristic start for Ben Roethlisberger in week one, turning the ball over 5 times in a tie with the Cleveland Browns. Bit of a head-scratcher since Ben talked about feeling as strong as ever coming into camp. We remember that. We learned yesterday he's dealing with an elbow injury, one that might limit him in practice this week. Needless to say, Roethlisberger wasn't thrilled with the way week one played out.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you don't win a football game, it feels like a loss. So it was, yesterday was tough. Sunday coming home, and then yesterday was tough. And, you didn't lose, but you also didn't win. So it definitely hurts. You know, the biggest thing that you take away from that game is the turnovers. You know, we turned the ball over 6 times, which is crazy to even think you have a chance to be in a game, in an NFL football game with 6 turnovers. So there's such a negative in that sense, but there's also a positive that we were still in the game. And I told our defense after the game, thanks to you guys for keeping us in it and special teams for helping us not lose it.
All right, CC, it doesn't get any easier now as the Steelers get ready to host the Chiefs this weekend. What does Ben Roethlisberger and this offense need to do to go ahead and get that first
win? Let me tell you what the defenders said under their breath after Ben left. You wouldn't have thrown them 5 picks. You're talking about we had 6 turnovers. Well, you had 5 of them.
Right.
Like, what about taking some responsibility? Like, for me, with the team, if we won or lost, it was secondary. It was how did I play? Because how I played is going to determine if we could win or lose. I can't control the game and the outcome of the game. The ball's going to bounce a certain way, and I can't control my teammates. This is the ultimate teammate. The one thing I can control is myself. And the one thing I start looking at after the game is myself and the plays that I could have made to build change the complexion of the game. Now, I know Ben's won a couple Super Bowls, but obviously he doesn't look at it that way. What do the Pittsburgh Steelers need? Well, their defense did play great, and they need a quarterback like Tyrod Taylor in this game. The only guy who played worse than him in week number one is Peterman.
Yeah. Tyrod was 15 of 40. It gets overlooked because he had that throw to Josh Gordon at the end, but he was 15 of 40.
So what do they need to get back? They need to be able to have a quarterback play bad like that. How many times, Nick, during the rest of the season are they going to have a quarterback that they're facing play worse than that?
Oh, I see what you mean.
And when you don't win a game, when the quarterback plays that way, no, you did lose. And I'm just saying right now, after week number one, that tie is going to come back to hurt the Pittsburgh Steelers. They always do this. Against the real good teams, they're pretty good. Against the team that they're supposed to be, they play down to the competition.
Particularly on the road.
And, well, they're inconsistent. At home, they're front running. They have the home crowd behind them. On the road, it's hard for them to generate that same enthusiasm. And that's why they've just been so consistent. Do they have great personnel? Yes, but with this great personnel, Nick, I've told you over and over, they get good individual results, but as a team, this is not one of the better collections of teams. I'm talking about tight fit. Like, if we're going to the AFC Championship, they have so many little holes that's why I like New England better than them when they face them. It's because it's the little things. It's not the big things.
And you can point to last year. Last year's Week 3 loss at Chicago, a bad Bears team, as the reason they were 13-3 instead of 14-2, the reason they didn't have the one seed, the reason they played the Jags in the divisional round instead of the Titans. Like, yes. A lot of butterfly effect from that moment. Now, the other thing is, so when we're talking about what do they need in this game against Kansas City, obviously they need Big Ben not to have 3 picks, 2 fumbles, 5 turnovers, disaster, right? But let's assume he's not going to do that. Now, he has done it twice in a year, but let's assume he's not going to do it again this year. What they need is, and this is interesting, but once you dig into the numbers, they need more consistent rushing attack, particularly in the second half of the game. You might say, well, hold on, James Conner had all those yards. James Conner, you can grade runs on are they successful, meaning how close do you get to a first down? Do you get a first down? James Conner's 11 first runs, 8 of them were successful. His final 20, only 3 of them graded out as successful, and he had a critical fumble. Ramon Foster, remember him? He's talking all sideways about L. Bell. He says after the game, well, you see how Le'Veon is, quote, the best in the world, and Foster is, quote, capable, but Le'Veon is flawless. Everyone on the Steelers acknowledged that one of the reasons they, or Connor, pardon me, one of the reasons that you didn't have AB have the game you would have expected is because the Browns were able to focus on the wide receivers, that James Conner was not dictating coverage the way Le'Veon Bell would. So that's going to happen again this week. I don't think Le'Veon Bell's going to play this week.
No, he's been taken off the depth chart.
And so I would imagine that means it's going to be tighter windows for Big Ben, tougher for Big Ben, and the Chiefs defense can get got. The Chiefs defense got lucky against the Chargers and a lot of drop passes.
But I don't think it's fair to James Conner in a big game like that where he carried the ball the number of times he did. He did fumble once. The Hall of Fame quarterback threw 5 picks.
Oh, for sure.
And he didn't bring that up.
For sure.
Okay? Like, so as a running back, you can only do something in your first start. Yeah, you're talking about potentially L. Bell. He's got numbers that say he would be a Hall of Famer. So people comparing him to that, it's not his fault. Like, it's not, he had a good game. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, they had a chance, their defense. They couldn't get off the field at the end of the game. They had a chance to win the game. They had plenty of chances to win the game. So looking at Connor as far as what effect he had on this game in a negative light, I just don't believe it's fair for the second-year player.
Are you saying that you think things would have been different, that he would have had a tighter game had L. Bell been there? Because Ben Roethlisberger was one of the first persons to come out and say, you know what, it's like it's almost a next man up situation. We're going to be fine with who we have.
Well, listen, what I'm saying is you look at the box score and James Conner had over 170 yards from scrimmage and you say he was a perfect duplication of Le'Veon Bell. I think you saw the impact in the second half, and I think you saw the impact on the passing game. It's not an indictment on the player who I thought played very well. In the fumble, you're right that Big Ben had 5 turnovers. James Conner had the 1 fumble. The point that I'm making is when we go to Kansas City, when you go to Kansas City, they are, I would imagine, once again going to scheme their entire game plan like the Browns did about stopping AB. And that puts more of an onus on Big Ben because he's going to have smaller windows. It's going to be more difficult for them to
move
the football.
Hey, where was Juju at? Where was Juju?
Juju did not have a big game.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
I just saw him on Instagram and stuff this offseason. I just wonder. I didn't know. I thought maybe he was holding
no,
something, too.
They've got
I didn't know. I just thought.
No one's going to feel bad for Pittsburgh. They've got plenty of weapons, and their backup running back had a monster game. The point that I'm making is the Kansas City Chiefs defense is vulnerable, and you should be able to take advantage of it. I would imagine they are going to dictate their entire game plan around trying to take Antonio away, which you're not able to do if Le'Veon's in the game, which right. I don't think he will be.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up on the other side is Jameis Winston's job in jeopardy. That's next on First Things First. Always a great game when USC takes on Texas. Check out the next chapter in that rivalry Saturday at 8 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time now for stories brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Le'Veon Bell still has not reported to the Steelers, and Pittsburgh is preparing for Week 2 without him. The Steelers removed him from the depth chart ahead of their matchup with the Chiefs. CC, how does this situation, do you think, resolve itself?
I don't know what he's going to do. I guess he's going to show up week number 10. Like, I don't know. I thought I knew what he was going to do. I do know this. Pittsburgh's not going to sign him to a long-term contract. All right? It's going to be a major distraction for the whole season.
I thought he was going to show up Saturday before week 1 to where he couldn't play, but he'd get his full check. I'm going to say he's going to show up sometime this week. Is he really going to sacrifice a guy that's made in his career about $13 million? Is he really going to sacrifice almost $900,000 a week? When they're not getting him a long-term deal, does that make any type of sense? Like, I got to think he shows up sometime this week, but that doesn't mean he plays this week against Kansas City.
All right. Carson Wentz, who missed week 1, still recovering from the knee injury he suffered at the end of last season, will not be back this week either. Eagles are in Tampa. According to reports, Wentz is expected to miss at least a few more weeks, and there is no hard and fast plan for his return. Nick, can the Eagles stay afloat with another Nick? Nick Foles.
Because of that defensive front and because of that offensive line, I believe they can. I think that of their opening 3 games, the toughest one was the one they already won against Atlanta. I know Tampa played great in week 1. I don't think Tampa's a great team. They have Tampa and Indy the next couple weeks. So, yes, I think they can stay afloat these next couple weeks, but not because of their quarterback, despite their quarterback.
Well, they're one of the few teams that we thought could survive with the backup in there until their starter gets back. Right, supported by a great roster. Offense and defensive lines are very, very strong. And Tampa was exciting offensively, but defensively, they could not stop the Saints. I watched the game last night. So Nick's going to have to be able to throw the ball against Tampa Bay in their secondary.
All right, bad news now for the Falcons. Pro Bowl linebacker Deion Jones will be placed on the IR after suffering a foot injury in the loss to the Eagles. The Falcons say they do expect him back at some point later this season, depending on how he heals. CeCe, how big of a blow is this to the Atlanta defense?
It's a huge blow to them because they also lose their starting strong safety, a big-time player in Neal, and then now they're losing their best coverage linebacker, a 3-down linebacker, the second-year player from LSU. He's a fabulous football player, but his ability to play sideline to sideline and guard running backs in man-to-man, that's what they're going to miss, especially playing in that division, going against Matty Ice and the other teams that they're going to face.
Going against Drew Brees.
Through the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Through the rest of the season, all those quarterbacks can throw the ball. So you have to have some great defenders and any team. If the Saints lost these 2 inside defenders, I would be saying the same thing facing these quarterbacks. So Atlanta's defense, I'm concerned about them.
Absolutely. To lose in week 1, maybe the best member of your secondary and the best coverage guy in your linebacking core and maybe the best all-around player in your linebacking core, no disrespect to Vic Beasley, it's enormous losses. It's 2 enormous losses for a team that defensively beat you with speed, with getting around the field, because they're not going to overpower you up front. Like, this is, it's one thing to lose a game you should have won in week one, which they did. It's another thing to lose that game and lose two players potentially for the season.
And no other division has two running backs like Alvin Kamara and
Christian McCaffrey coming out of the backfield.
Yeah, they're going to have problems matching up with them.
All right, and finally, who would have thunk? Ryan Fitzpatrick would have had arguably the best quarterback performance of any QB in week one, throwing over 400 yards and four touchdowns in a win over the Saints. Tampa Bay's head coach Dirk Cutter called him a good leader who backs up what he says with how he plays. See, is Jameis Winston in any danger here of losing his starting job to Fitzpatrick?
Even before the great performance against the Saints, Jameis, it was on the board that he could lose his job. Dirk Cutter and Fitzy did a great job in this game. I watched this game last night because I was trying to catch up on the games after being gone. And offensively, man, they attacked him. And they lost Deshaun Jackson during the game, and he was having a monster game. So him, Evans, man, they got great weapons. OJ as the tight end there, man, they got some people that present some problems. This is the Tampa Bay that we thought we were going to see last year.
Yep.
All the experts and everything, man, Tampa Bay is going to be that surprise team. We thought that. Maybe they were a year away. Jameis didn't grow his game, didn't have the type of year we expected, but maybe they were just 1 year removed from that. So Jameis is in trouble because not only his play on the field, but because of his conduct off the field.
Deshaun Jackson, the big reason we thought last year Tampa could be a surprise team was the offseason addition of Deshaun Jackson. Pardon me. He caught more bombs, more balls that traveled at least 25 yards in the air yesterday or this weekend than he did all of last season. That is Deshaun Jackson's specialty, is he is one of the top deep threats in all of football. And Fitzpatrick had a marvelous game. The reason I would caution some of the optimism about Fitzpatrick moving forward is we've seen this from him before. A monster game followed by him going back to being Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's actually been a tendency in his career that right after his best games, he then doesn't have an average game. He has a slightly below average game. So I think that under normal circumstances, a fourth-year quarterback in Jameis, number one overall pick, a guy whose quarterback rating has ticked up each year, there would be no chance he loses the job. Jameis' circumstances are not normal. Jameis' circumstances are with serious off-the-field concerns and with new people in charge. And for all those reasons, like, Jameis is on a much shorter leash than a number one overall pick still on his rookie contract ever would be.
And you can't forget Mike Evans. If there's not seven better receivers.
No.
So if I had the top eight list, Mike Evans is going to be in that group. Typically, we do group of receivers. We only do the top three or four. We only talk about A.B., Julio,
right.
Odell. We don't go down. Nuke in Houston. Mike Evans there in Tampa Bay. He's a spectacular talent and was dominant in the game against the Saints in week one.
Quick follow-up. When you talked about Deshaun Jackson and what he did last year, is that because you think he and Jameis Winston couldn't connect? Was it a negative on Winston, or was it just him and how he's really coming to his own this year?
Listen, last year was an outlier year for Deshaun in his career. So, like, I think people attributed it to Jameis. And if Jameis comes back and all of a sudden they can't get on the same page again, then people will attribute it to him again. I just think it was a down year for Deshaun.
Jameis wasn't really good and accurate on his deep ball. Okay. Last year, if you look at what are the things that he maybe went backwards on, him throwing the deep pass was not good for him.
Special interest by me because Hard Knocks team.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's why. A couple years I know ago. All the, yes. the players involved, and I have a million follow-up questions. We'll do that in the break. Hey, moving on to the Raiders now. After losing 33-13 to the Rams on Monday night, the Raiders are close to re-signing Martavis Bryant. If you recall, Oakland cut him before the season started after trading a third-round pick for him in the offseason. All this with a possible drug suspension lingering over the troubled wideout. CeCe, can Martavis actually bolster this Raiders offense?
I see a problem because Martavis only plays outside receiver. Amari Cooper can play some in the slot, but hadn't played a lot in the slot. Jordy Nelson has been predominantly in his career. He's played outside. Now, people say, man, I'm trying to put a wide receiver team together. Well, I like to have it like a basketball team. I need a point guard. I need a big guy, a center, or a guy who can score.
It's why Tampa, we thought, fit so well, because Mike Evans and Deshaun Jackson, power forward and shooting guard, right?
And now they got a lot of similar traits. Jordy Nelson's a deep threat. Amari Cooper's a deep threat. John Gruden doesn't necessarily have that type of offense like the old Raiders, where they threw the ball down the field an awful lot. So what I see is, how are they going to use him? Like, is he a quality? Is he going to make the room better? Yes, but only if the guy that's making the food understands how to use the ingredients. And I don't feel like Gruden utilizes three receivers well enough in his offenses to be able to take advantage of their talent. If this was the Pittsburgh Steelers and Todd Haley, I've been like, yeah, I feel like he's going to be utilized the right way. Now, is he a talent? Yes. Can he make big plays in the game? Yes, but we all need a system. West Coast offense, what is it? Get the ball out of your hand quick. All right? That's not his thing. He's good with his catch and his run, but that's not his thing. He is better off the further he gets down the field. So the Raiders and Gruden, I just haven't seen it yet. So are they more talented with him in the room? Yes. But I got to talk to the chef and see if he knows how to use ingredients maybe to make up this special recipe that Raiders Nation would be happy with.
And I got to talk to the chef to find out, is there actually a recipe? Or are you just grabbing a bunch of different ingredients?
It could be like your mama. She ain't got no recipe, but it's good.
Okay, yeah, but it better be good. If you're working without a script, it better be good, because what has frustrated me about the Raiders is they don't seem to have a consistent plan. You can't simultaneously be in rebuild while also being the oldest team in the league. You can't trade away Khalil Mack. One of the reasons we thought was because they've got this money earmarked for Amari Cooper, and not have Amari Cooper's development be paramount to this season. We know how talented Amari Cooper is. His first year in the league, nearly 1,100 yards. His second year in the league, nearly 1,100 yards. A down year last year, and then one catch in week one of this year. Six games since the beginning of last season, Amari's had less than 10 yards receiving. That's got to be Gruden's number one priority.
Gruden, when he signed with Oakland, one of the players he mentioned was Amari Cooper. Our passing attack will be centered around this guy. I'm going to continue to develop him so he's going to be one of the better receivers. Amari Cooper has unlimited potential. In the last year, year and a half, we haven't seen his game grow after coming into the league and being spectacular early.
This is a team that scored 13 points Monday night. Is this guy going to help with that?
Well, the thing with Martavis Bryant is, theoretically, yes, because he is a big splash play guy. And I actually understand why they cut him and then brought him back. If he has the drug suspension looming, and if he's a guy that Gruden called him, he's like the white tiger. Sometimes he shows up, sometimes he doesn't. Use some odd zoo analogy. They didn't want to have his salary guaranteed for the year, so they cut him before week one. They bring him back after. I understand that. But this is not where the Raiders have a major need. And to me, I am concerned about what's happened with Amari Cooper and the connection with Derek Carr over the last 17 games, from the beginning of last year to now. And I don't know that trying to get another wide receiver on the same page with Carr helps that. And that is much more important. The Cooper-Carr relationship, much more important than adding a little bit of talent to your wide receiver room.
If I'm a veteran on that team, which they got a bunch of them, I'm concerned about the messaging point of John Gruden. Khalil Mack, off the field, no blemishes, great character, great leader, great football player. John Gruden and them said that they were worried about Martavius if he was going to be available. So now we have a guy from Buffalo who's worked himself up. He's one of the best defenders, maybe the best defensive player that we have. He's done everything the right way. They decide we're not going to sign him. But a guy that they have publicized is, we don't know if he's going to be here. He's a white tiger. I just haven't heard a coach use that a whole bunch. How good is a white tiger playing NFL football? The guy doesn't show up sometime, but we're going to allow him to be in the locker room. And the guy we didn't have any problems with, he couldn't be here. And you make up some excuse, oh, he didn't want to be here. So get a little consistent, John. All right? So I'm an advocate for guys, Josh Gordon, Randy Gregory, Martavis, all these guys, similar backgrounds to myself. But at some point, you got to be responsible for your decisions. And Gruden is going to have to be responsible with every subject for the Khalil Mack thing. Because if you don't have Khalil on that defense, you better have an explosive offense.
The only thing that makes the Khalil Mack a better story was when Gruden came out that night and said, yeah, I know we were lacking in the pass rush.
Yeah, I'll look at the film and figure it out. Figure out what happened. They also just, by the way, like...
You got rid of your pass rush.
You said yesterday, see, your collection of your decisions. You gave up a fifth-round pick for A.J. McCarron, okay? He's the only backup quarterback on your roster right now. You gave a third-round pick for a player you cut before the season started. You've now brought back and given a second chance. And that's the messaging to the locker room that I think is potentially troubling. To give multiple chances to a guy who just got there.
You didn't draft him.
You didn't draft him. He has no history with those players in the locker room, and he had red flags beforehand. Like, it just, it doesn't, you're not telling a consistent story in Oakland. And sometimes, even if the story's not great, if you are building to something along a consistent narrative line,
yes,
then it can make sense.
And in that locker room, if you want guys to trust you, these guys don't know Gruden. It's like they're not watching Monday Night Football. Like, you have to develop trust in anything that you're doing. I just believe, based on his messaging, it's been inconsistent, and I believe it affects older players because they can see through it.
That's a good point. All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, Tom Brady has two new wide receivers to throw to. We'll let you know who next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings joins us now. Hey, Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Great to see you.
Talking some Patriots today. New England remains undefeated this season at 1-0. Despite that record, New England still looking to bolster their receiving core. The Pats signed 2016 first-round pick Corey Coleman and former Bronco Benny Fowler yesterday, trying to find more weapons for Tom Brady before they take on the Jaguars this weekend. Fans seem to always worry about Brady's weapons. CC, is all of the worrying justified?
Yeah, there's no great quarterback we've seen in the league play with less talent than Tom Brady. Yeah, they should. It should be justified. I mean, they're doing an amazing job. I don't know how they do it. Like, I really don't. Like, I've worked with wide receivers. I'm talking about young kids, high school, college kids, and professional. And the reason why I like working in high school and college is because kids can do more than younger kids. The reason why pro coaches like wide receivers in the pros, they like pro football, not only do they throw the ball, the quality of the quarterbacks, but they can come there and draw up something, and these guys in the NFL receiving room, they can do it. Now, I don't know how they get all the productivity because they look for skill sets that other people don't look for. How well a guy can run with the football, how many different positions can he play? Those things become very, very important. They don't build their receiving core like Chris Carter. I need a basketball team, Greg. I need a point guard, a field general. I need a big dude, either a center or a power forward, someone that can score the basketball. I need someone to be able to run the lanes and do all that. No, because they have Tom Brady, one of the most accurate quarterbacks, and Josh McDaniels and their system they come up with to be able to throw the ball to the backs that are able to kind of complement their passing game. It's a, they confuse me. Like, cause to me, in the NFL, it always starts with talent. And with New England, no, it starts with your head, how smart you are, how much information, and week after week after week, can you change or throw away what we had and adapt to a new game plan potentially every week. And that's why New England and Belichick, they typically have more college graduates than anyone on the team. That's because they can learn more football, more volumes of information. But when I would put a wide receiver group together, I would do the opposite of what New England has done. So I have to compliment them on what they do. Like, the receivers they have now, Philip Dorsett, I coached him since he was 14 years old. I know the type of talent he has. He just has not achieved since he was drafted in the first round by the Colts. He is a competent NFL receiver. New England, what they look for, Greg, is totally different than things and attributes that some other teams and how they built their roster.
Think at the last part of what you said, you hit it right on the head. They don't per se look for the most talent. They figure, I don't need the most talent. We've proven that with Tom Brady. He's one of the smartest quarterback, not the most talented quarterback.
He's the talent.
He is the talent.
Right.
But it's more up here for New England. It's about how well do you understand the game of football? Can you be at the right depth? Can you move around and play different positions? Can you learn the concept? Can you flow in what we do versus what you think you do best? And I think that's what's so unique about the New England Patriots. They take guys and they take their strengths, and their strengths almost don't even matter. It's all about how smart of a football player are you, and can we plug you in with one of the greatest quarterbacks, if not the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, in a lot of people's opinion. And when I look at what they're doing now with Corey Coleman and Benny Fowler, like, these are bodies right now.
Correct.
These are bodies. These are bodies.
Listen, they brought in Amari Darbo and Chad Hansen a couple weeks ago. Those guys are now gone. Mm-hmm. They are replaced by Benny Fowler and Corey Coleman. Corey Coleman is a little different than what you're describing. He's what their tendency is. Corey Coleman
different.
Is a guy that is a high-level talent, but who has not been able to find his way in this league. Corey Coleman's second game in the league. Second game, 5 for 104 and 2 touchdowns. And Cleveland's like, got it. First-round pick wide receiver, got it. The problem is every other game he played, he has 600 yards and 3 touchdowns combined. So, like, he showed high-level ability instantly and never recaptured it. He wasn't good enough to stay on Cleveland, wasn't good enough to stay on Buffalo. But so what they are doing with him is saying, we'll bring him in. These guys, we got 3 more weeks till Edelman gets back.
Absolutely.
Like, we are trying to tread water till Edelman gets back. The reason I'd be – go ahead, C.
Even not with Edelman, we know the suspension, but – New England, and Greg, I'm pretty certain, will vouch for this. Every year since they've changed the collective bargaining agreement and they shortened the practice, New England's training camp is not 4 weeks. They don't play 4 preseason games. They play 8 because they take the first 4 games of the regular season and churn the bottom of that roster just to see. They just have them bodies there to see who's going to fit in. Now, we have the Edelman suspension now, just like we had the Brady suspension, so we look at the first 4 games. But this is what Belichick does. You can't practice as much. He tells you that, man. We don't know what kind of team we're going to be, but they use those first 4 games, continue to turn the bomb of that roster, and have an additional training camp so they're ready to move on because they know they're going to have a postseason. These other teams are trying to get into the postseason, and they take those 12 weeks to put themselves in position.
Look, this is – you hit it. They just want bodies to be there to where if they strike lightning in a bottle, great. If not – okay, we can still get it done.
But they seem to do that more so than not when they bring guys that don't make – I mean, you get a guy that didn't work out in Cleveland, and he's going to come here. He seems to find whatever it is they're good at.
Let me tell you.
And throw them in that lane.
They churn so much, though. They miss. They had some veteran players.
They're throwing a lot of darts.
Yeah,
they do. Just remember
and the reason hits. Why – and the Maybe reason why it's not painful is because I'm going to tell you what requirement is necessary. You got to be willing to go there and work for free. They ain't going to pay no wide receiver no money. Now, they did trade for Brandon Cook, but they traded him on out the door when they had to give him some money. Amendola, one of their favorites. The reason why he left to go to Miami? Money. All these guys, for the most part, have been on the minimum. And then Hogan, they gave him a little bump, but he's right in that. You better stay in your lane. If not, we will move on without you. So one of the requirements is you can't require a lot of money to play there either, Greg.
That is 100% accurate. And you look at on the other side of the ball with what they went through with Malcolm Butler. He wanted more money. See, I good player.
Yeah, and it's
we
been like
understand
this for a decade.
You're
Deion Brand.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wins a Super Bowl MVP.
Yes.
I'll holler at you later, man.
Yeah, but go ahead.
But does this all end when they stop winning? Then all of a sudden, when
of
they
course.
Stop winning, and when Tom Brady goes and he's done, he's finished. All of a sudden, New England doesn't become the Xanadu that it is anymore, and people
Belichick,
are going to go there.
Wherever Belichick is, okay, Matt Patricia, you don't take that with you. That's why the players in Detroit are complaining. That's why Mangini didn't win. That's why Josh McDaniel didn't win. As long as the boss Belichick's there, he's going to run the salary cap that way because he just believes he can get more value. That's why he's got the best quarterback that we've ever played. Kirk Cousins, for my team, making twice as much money as Tom Brady.
Well,
because they know what they're doing with the cap, and their emphasis has been to keep those salaries down.
And just one note on the players that they grabbed this week, Corey Coleman most notably. I think some people say, hey, Philip Dorsett, he didn't work out. He just had the best game of his career week 1. Philip Dorsett was acquired at the exact time, essentially, last year that Corey Coleman, they're acquiring him now. And Philip Dorsett was a non-factor last year. It is incredibly difficult in this system to be acquired during the year and make a difference. Giants. They acquired the veteran wide receiver at the tail end of last year that we thought could potentially make a difference from Tennessee, whose name is escaping me.
Kenny Britt.
Kenny Britt and Decker. Both of them played in Tennessee.
Right. Britt's who I was thinking of late in the year. Oh, this is a good body for them. He made no impact, didn't get into it. If you don't have the offseason with New England, which Corey Coleman obviously didn't, it is incredibly difficult. But they had three wide receivers on the roster. You can't even play special teams with three wide receivers on the roster. Like, they had to bring guys in this week.
And Corey Coleman's got two other offenses. Cleveland gave up on him. And he's got their offense in his brain. Buffalo, trading to Buffalo. Buffalo, you think they couldn't use him?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Peter Bergerman, he can't use another receiver? Yes, he could. They could have used him. He's got their offense in his head. How does he get a hold of that New England offense and how quick it is? That determines how long he's going
to
be there.
Greg Jennings, stick around. We got more to come. Other side, how much trouble are Cam Newton and the Panthers in after losing Greg Olsen? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Greg Jennings. Panthers beat the Cowboys Sunday. That's good news. Cam Newton lost his favorite target for the foreseeable future. That is the bad news. Greg Olsen refractured the same foot he injured last season. He says he does hope to return, though, later this season. CeCe, how much does the loss of Greg Olsen impact this Panthers offense?
Now, Greg Olsen, he's one of my favorite players. Now, you talking about a tough guy? A guy that can block on the end of the line of scrimmage? Look how good Carolina's been running the football since he's been there. Mm-hmm. So let's forget about Cam Newton. And a lot of that, they don't have a great offensive line. No, they work in unison. But this guy, in this era where tight ends are one-dimensional, no, this is a three-down tight end. Man, he gets his nose in there. You can flex him out wide. Now, is he as flexible as Gronk here, where you can run individual routes? No. But he is a hell of a wide receiver and a very, very – because I'm not one just to give away the great football player, but he's right there to that good to great argument. You can have that argument. He's got great hands. He runs great routes, really understands defense, what they're trying to do. And with Cam Newton, if you put him in the gun and he puts the ball in the running back and you have an RPO where you quarterback the run pass option, the tight end's ability to be able to get up the seam when those linebackers come up, now they don't have that. So they're going to be running a lot of RPOs. But when you lose his ability to be able to block down, open up a hole, the ability to be able to expand the defense, to be able to get down the field, and he is the surest-handed receiver that they have on their roster. Cam Newton has thrived throwing the ball. I'm going to have to get Dusty later on to break down the numbers as far as who he throws to.
He's been his best receiving
option. Yeah, there's no question.
The most consistent. And at 6'6", what's Cam's missing point, Nick, when he misses?
Throws high.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of those balls been caught by Greg Olsen that would have been incompletions, Greg.
Look, when I look at Greg Olsen and him not being present for Cam Newton, this is a huge loss. You're talking about Cam's number one receiver over the last 5 years. When healthy, he's been his only 1,000-yard receiver with the outlier year, Kelvin Benjamin, who they had the same amount of yards, but Greg Olsen still had led the team in receiving. This guy, and then not to mention, when you bring in Norv Turner, mm-hmm. a guy who runs an offense that is predicated on a big X receiver, you have that in Devin Funches.
Yep.
A running back that can catch the ball out of the backfield. You have that in McCaffrey, and a tight end that can get down the middle of the field, catch those crossers, catch the seams, and do the big bulk of the body work. You look at Antonio Gates when he was in San Diego. In his success, mm-hmm. this is who Greg Olsen was going to be. You look at Kyle Rudolph, what he was able to do with Norv Turner. This is huge for Cam Newton, for Norv Turner as well, because this is a huge part of his offensive scheme.
And something, Nick, you and I have been discussing, it's even going to have a bigger effect. Because we thought this was going to, because I got a lot of faith in Norv Turner. My last year, 16 years in the league, Miami, Norv Turner was offensive coordinator. He's one of the reasons why I came out of retirement. He's like, Chris, I know how to use you. You and Mike Irvin, I know what to do. Deep in, come back on the outside. Every once in a while, I'll throw you a little bone, throw you one deep. Oh, okay, North, thank you. Quick slant. Yeah, all those things. He knows how to get guys and be successful offensively. But, Nick, what's the biggest problem with Carolina right now? that offensive line.
Well, that's, I mean, that's why you guys are making all these great points about Olsen being Cam's favorite target. He's been targeted 720 times since Cam's rookie year. So I totally agree. But they Ryan Khalil, their left tackle, he's on IR. Their right tackle, Darrell Williams, he was carted off this past weekend. He needs knee surgery. And now Greg Olsen has a broken foot, and we don't know if he's coming back. So your left tackle, your right tackle, and the guy who can help out backup tackles, Greg Olsen, they're all gone. There's a reason why in Atlanta, and I understand it's a road game, but Carolina is a six-point dog this week. Six-point dog. Atlanta looked bad in week one. Carolina's defense looked dominant in week one. And Carolina goes there having a better record than Atlanta last year, and they're a six-point underdog. Explain that to me. It's because there's real concern about who's going to catch the ball for Carolina and how you're going to keep Cam upright. Like, is it going to have to be another game where Cam is constantly under duress? Like, this is the most important player on their offense other than Cam Newton.
And you and I thought that Cam with Norv, because I told you what Norv was going to do to Cam, and I believe that Cam was to that point where he's had enough success, but also in his recent failure, that he would surrender his game. So if Cam's numbers suffer, I don't want people out there criticizing him, because you need to realize what he's working with. He lost his number one receiver the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. He's already got his left tackle on the rack. Right tackle just went down. Now, Cam is the ultimate force multiplier, but listen, you need some help. And Carolina, if they start to struggle offensively, because, man, they have lost a number of players that will affect their quarterback.
All right, well, Carolina's going to have to show up and play regardless on Sunday. They're not going to give them a couple weeks off to think and regroup here. Who's the next guy up? Who does Cam throw the ball to? Who's going to be the next guy that's going to step up that he's going to feel comfortable enough with?
I think we're going to see a lot of Jarius Wright. Number 13, they brought him over from Minnesota. He was in the system with Norv Turner when Norv was in Minnesota. He runs that deep cross, that deep over. He can get through the seams and create that one-on-one that you want for a Devin Funchess coming in that deep, that big end that he likes to throw to a bigger receiver. I think this is the guy that they have to get productivity out of. And then Ian Thomas. A young guy, he has to step up. This is a great opportunity for him. I mean, he's going to be the future there. So when you look at this opportunity that is presenting itself, they have a lot of young DJ Moore. They have a lot of young receivers.
They've spent a lot of draft capital.
Yes.
On Curtis Samuel, second round pick last year. DJ Moore, a first round pick this year. You mentioned Ian Thomas, I think a fourth round pick this year, because you saw that Greg Olsen last year got dinged up. You knew that at some point you were going to have to transition there. But this is also Christian McCaffrey. Remember, we're going to feature him. 10 carries week one. Right. They were talking about he's going to have 20-plus carries. Like, he's not a between-the-tackles killer the way they tried to make him out to be. Despite the fact that Cam might be my favorite player in the league, you were shocked when I didn't pick the Panthers to make the playoffs. I thought the loss of Norwell was huge. They already had one injury on the offensive line. Darrell Williams, their right tackle, who got carted off this week, he got dinged, more than dinged, in training camp. They're like, we're going to try to work with him anyway. I just thought it's so hard to go through the whole year healthy on the offensive line. If you go into the year with two injuries on the offensive line, you're in trouble after losing your Pro Bowl, All-Pro guard in free agency. Now to lose Olsen? There's a reason the Panthers, we talk about the Cowboys not having a single play over 20 yards. The Panthers had two plays over 15 yards. One was Greg Olsen and the other was a Cam run. Like, their offense struggled with the explosive plays last week already, and you saw it once Olsen went out of the game.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.